In 1993, at the age of 35, Philip Simmons was diagnosed with the fatal degenerative neuromuscular condition known as ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Doctors said he'd be dead within 2 to 5 years. Although he's outlived those predictions, he's faced with constantly diminishing physical abilities. For the past 2 years, he's been in a wheelchair. He can no longer lift his arms. Simmons taught literature and creative writing at Lake Forest College in Chicago until his illness made that too difficult. He now lives with his wife and children in rural New Hampshire. He's published fiction and literary criticism and continues to write with the help of a voice-activated computer. His latest work is an extended essay centering on the religious insights he's turned to while living in the face of death. It's called Learning to Fall. This self-published book has done so well, it will be republished by Bantam Books this winter. I asked Philip Simmons how his life changed after his diagnosis.
I think the surprising thing is that outwardly, I changed very little. All the normal human issues that are present in your life don't change. They're only put under greater pressure. So, you know, if you have money worries, you're really going to have money worries now. If you have difficulty in your marriage, that is going to be put under greater pressure. So everything just gets ratcheted up. And even though outwardly very little about my life changed, you know, I continued teaching and raising my children and writing books and so on, the change is inward in that I learned over time, and again, this wasn't easy, I learned to put all those issues in a larger context and to gain a greater sense of perspective on them.
You, I think it's fair to say, have turned to your knowledge of Western and Eastern religions to try to help come up with some meaningful answers to the questions you've been asking, which are questions that most of us ask. The question often asked by somebody who has gotten sick is, why me? Have you spent a lot of time dwelling on that particular question?
I haven't. I find that question not particularly productive. For one thing, I can look around and without much effort find people in far worse circumstances than I. So why me is really kind of a false question. Why any of us might be the more relevant one. Why, as human beings, must we suffer? Why do we die? These are the questions we really have to grapple with.
In your book, Learning to Fall, you write that when you're in city streets, you're now greeted warmly by drunkards and the homeless. You say, I suspect that the wheelchair catches their eye, that I'm simply a spectacle. I also sense they recognize me as kin, welcomed into the family of the marginal and the maimed. How do you feel about this welcome?
I feel fine and even thrilled to be exploring new territory. There's a sense of adventure in entering into realms of being that are new to me and ways of being. There is a sense in which all of us in wheelchairs move in a different reality than other folks. And there's a part of me that has enjoyed exploring that reality, even though, of course, I'd rather be up and around.
Phil, because you're a writer and a teacher, Do you think you have a desire to turn your sickness into like a lesson that you can present?
Well, that may be. I think when we're faced with a challenge like mine, what I have to do is do whatever I can, do what's in my power. I happen to be a writer and a teacher, so at some point, it was natural for me to use those talents in my situation.
It seems to me it puts a lot of pressure on you, though, to have to constantly transform things into lessons.
Well, it's our duty, Terry.
As a teacher, you mean?
Well, as human beings, our own happiness is valuable ultimately only if it leads to the happiness of others.
But do you ever feel that by putting this pressure on yourself to turn your experiences into lessons, that you're having to package things in such a way that are still really unresolved or still really ambiguous and painful, but somehow maybe present them in a way where they're more resolved than they really are?
I see. Right. Well, you don't want to be false to your experience, and neither do I want to become too programmatic and predictable. I think the challenge for me is to keep learning, keep exploring, keep allowing myself to be humbled by experience and humbled by the realization that I don't have it all figured out. And as long as I can be true to that and be true to my own ignorance and my own imperfection, I think I can keep things in balance.
Do you ever suspect that we actually live in a pointless, chaotic universe?
I think that probably about every 8 hours or so. Yes, of course. But, the pendulum swings the other way. And I do sense the order and the life force that's here in my breath, in the lawn that needs mowing outside my window, in the sound of my daughter laughing in the next room. And life returns at some point to fill that void that we all do peer into from time to time.
I'm wondering about the pressures on your children. I think it's hard for children who know that they have a parent who's very sick and might not live a lot longer. There's the pressure of how much time should I spend at home with them and not go out and not be my friends because they're sick, because they need me, because I want to see them as much as I can. And yet, they're kids and they probably want to go out and be with their friends. And then there's the pressure of how much responsibility to put on kids to help take care of the sick parent. I'm sure this is the kind of thing you've given a lot of thought to. Can you share some of those thoughts with us about kind of pacing your own children and how much you think they should be devoting their energies to the concerns of having a sick father?
It is a balancing act, and as any parent knows, you feel your way through it without any programmatic solution. My kids are terrific. They are my heroes. They keep me going in many ways every day. Certainly, my children are under a lot of stress, and I try as much as I can not to place too great a burden on them, wanting them, after all, to just be kids and be able to do the things they need to do. On the other hand, I'm sending them scurrying to fetch my reading glasses or press the buttons on the TV remote and so forth. And for the most part, they are wonderful about this. And I think I have a deeper sense of participation in my life, given that I am weak and I am vulnerable. I'm not one of these distant, all-powerful fathers. I may be all-knowing and omniscient, but at least on the physical plane, I'm not in control of my environment. I think that's providing for them a real sensitivity and awareness to the vulnerabilities that are present in everyone. They're also very good at scouting out wheelchair access to public buildings and are very alert and astute to matters of that kind.
My guest is Philip Simmons. His book is called Learning to Fall, The Blessings of an Imperfect Life. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Philip Simmons, a writer and literature professor who was diagnosed 8 years ago with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, a degenerative and fatal neuromuscular condition. He's written a book called Learning to Fall, The Blessings of an Imperfect Life. I know there's a lot of relationships, you know, couple relationships where one person gets sick and the other person becomes the caregiver. And it really changes the relationship from a relationship that's built on, you know, love and equality and all that stuff to a relationship where one person needs care and the other person gives it, and it just, all these other things enter the relationship and it sometimes survives and other times doesn't. I think sometimes one of the nice things about professional caregivers, if you're sick, is that it means that some of the care that you need can be given by someone else who's not your spouse or your lover, thus freeing up the relationship to not just be less consumed with caregiving and care getting. Am I making any sense?
Yes, and there are two parts to that. The first practical part is, yes, by all means, we need to bring professional caregivers into the situation, into the household. My wife, though she's a wonderful, caring, strong, loving woman, cannot do it all. And having that care by other people allows us to have a relationship that is not just about caregiving. Having said that, it is a continual challenge to reinvent our relationship month by month, year by year, as my health changes. Again, that's not much different than what all long married couples face, that need for creativity and for continual reinvention. But again, the fact of my physical decline puts greater pressure on that creative process.
You write in your book, "I had spent my life in pursuit of knowledge and happiness, only to find that both were overrated." What do you mean?
Well, knowledge only takes us so far. At some point, we come up against an experience that we really can't understand on a rational level, and that is the entrance into an awareness of mystery and a fuller participation in the mystery of life. Happiness is overrated because, again, our own happiness is not what is necessarily most important or the end of life. Thinking only about your own happiness is the surest way to remain unhappy. We need to heal ourselves and care for ourselves as a necessary first step to caring for others and healing others.
If you found that knowledge and happiness were overrated, what have you found that isn't overrated?
Well, it's almost a banality, but love is not overrated. The ability to keep coming back to life, no matter what dark place you've been in, the ability to return again and again to what most concerns us in the human experience is awe-inspiring and cannot be overrated. There are really no words to describe that life force that propels us forward no matter our circumstances.
Well, Philip Simmons, I wish you the best, and I really thank you for sharing some of your thoughts with us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Terry.
Philip Simmons' book is called Learning to Fall, The Blessings of an Imperfect Life. The book is self-published and will be brought out in a new edition by Bantam Books this winter.